Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape the community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
If you've driven along the shores of Lake Michigan this winter, you may have come across some hardy surfers enjoying peak season for freshwater surfing. One local surfer, Ken Cole, took his passion for surfing beyond getting out on the water. He's created the world's first leaf-based surfboard to encompass what he believes is the art, soul, and sustainable future of surfing. Cole shaped his board with coffee bags, palm leaves, and plant-based resin. This board has been 6 years in the making, following a lot of trial and error and help from his community. Cole is featured in this month's issue of Milwaukee Magazine, and to share more about all the efforts that went into the eco-friendly surfboard, Ken Cole joins me now. He begins by explaining what motivated him to go from just a surfer to shaping his own boards.
At first, I would call myself staying busy, then I would say that I was a maker, and about 7 years ago, I realized that I'm an artist, and I decided to apply that skill to shaping surfboards. So it was a chance for me to really explore my passion for art, but also my passion for surfing too. And when you look at most surfboards, they're basically, in essence, a shaped slab of foam with a fin on it and some decals and stickers. And boards are, trust me, I love all surfboards, they're great. But my goal was to make boards that capture the beauty of surfing. So I think back to like back in the day when you would see a radio or a television or even a car, like form and function were married and they were works of art.
Craftsmanship.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So every board that I shaped really kind of stood out to the point of a lot of folks would say, this shouldn't be in the water. This should be on, this should be in my den or in a museum or something, which I took great pride in. But the goal was to just, I mean, literally make boards that were beautiful and that captured the essence of surfing. And they all are meant to be surfed.
Can you explain the typical traditional process and the materials involved in shaping surfboards and then how your process differed? And was that a tenet for you from the start?
Yeah, so the typical process, if you want to really go back, is there's a famous photograph among surfers, let's say, and it's of a Hawaiian individual standing in front of Diamond Head, which is a mile or so in the background. And he's holding what's called a paipo, which is like a four-foot surfboard. It looks like a boogie board. And that's made of koa. So if you go back to its origin, surfing was made not by surfers in SoCal or back in Australia, but rather Hawaiians, indigenous peoples, and also Africa as well. And it was made from natural materials. So the way I look at it is that paipo, that mini surfboard, is somewhere in Hawaii now. It's gone full circle. So surfing evolved, and I think in the 50s or 60s, after hollow wooden surfboards and traditional surfboards, foam made its presence
known.
Foam
reigned.
Yeah, foam. Yeah. And foam, honestly, is an amazing thing to work with. It's fantastic. Every board I made, except for this one we'll talk about later, is made out of expanded polystyrene, which is made out of crude oil. And across the globe, foam is being banned for a host of reasons. One is that it's always going to be here with us. But also, two, it is reliant upon oil. So going back to what I said earlier is trying to find a way to have a board that captures the beauty of surfing while also respecting the water you surf in, it's impossible to accomplish that if you're riding on foam. And of the millions upon millions of boards that are out there, this is an estimate, 99.99%
sure,
have a foam core. So my initial iteration was to see what I could do to depart from that a little bit, and it was very minor. So basically what I began to do was wrap the boards in jute or coffee bags. I would make my own fins. I would repurpose wood to have what's called a tail block, a nose block, and then use plant-based resin. And it got attention. It kind of got me wondering, well, what else could be done? But I found myself consistently running up against, oh, it's the foam, which is the core. Everything's built around that.
Yeah. And is it built around that because during the time it was just a material that worked best? Or is it because as surfers, you want a light board that moves well, and that foam has always been the ticket.
Like I said, foam is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It is amazing. It's not quite feather light, but it's very light, and it's easy to shape, sculpt with, and once you get the resin and the glass and wrap it up, it is a joy to work with, but we shouldn't be working with it. There's other options.
Yeah. And do you think there's been a reluctance to shift to more eco-friendly boards, or just that it hasn't been tried that much? Because surfers in general, I assume, care about keeping the waters they use clean and caring for the earth. Perhaps that's too broad, but,
I would like to think that surfers, if they were forced to make a choice, they would make a choice that supports the planet. That's my hope. I don't think the industry right now, though, is really pushing for that just yet, because it is used for everything. Mm-hmm. It's almost like saying, if someone said, well, you can run a car on steam tomorrow, it would be pretty difficult to change how we get from point A to point B. It'd be difficult to kind of break people's reliance upon oil and gas stations. The infrastructure is built for gas-powered vehicles. So it's an odd way of looking at it, but surfing's more reliant upon foam than we are on gas for our cars. So I just don't think that the industry right now is ready and willing to seriously consider what other options are out there.
So with your board, one key thing that kind of started your thought process, you came upon a plate made of palm leaves that's, disposable, biodegradable. How was this kind of the spark point for you?
Yeah, the story behind it, I think, is kind of interesting and humbling. A friend of mine, Tom, was having a backyard birthday party for his daughter, and he distributes these leaves and dishware made of palm leaves. And I happened to be using one and pulled one out of the trash and began to think, and this one I was beginning to make boards, what else could be done with this? So the first thing I made was a fen. And it was pretty sturdy, it was pretty light, but it wasn't very durable. It wasn't very strong. So toyed around with ways of prepping the leaf, working with the resin, positive pressure, all these things, and it was pretty durable. And that was kind of it, literally in someone's backyard, digging through trash at a party.
Inspiration strikes,
Yeah. And more than that, though, too, it has this aesthetic, which is natural, obviously, and no two leaves are the same, the grains that are on it. And when I prepped that and saw the outcome, I think that's what got things kind of going in that direction.
And you mentioned coffee bags, and that was part of your process from the beginning, right? Was the coffee bags and the board, and then the resin has kind of followed. You brought some examples here that I can touch and feel kind of the weight of the resin in the palm and the coffee bags. So these are kind of your three central ingredients, right?
Yeah, so the board itself, what I've done is I have replaced the entire foam core. And what you have is a surfboard that's made out of those three ingredients, the plant-based resin, jute, and then the palm leaf. So what's interesting is the jute serves the same purpose as fiberglass, because there's a weave, right?
Yeah.
And that is something that goes on the outside of let's say, the palm leaf. And the end product is not just a surfboard that's made of this composite. The bait and switch, in some respects, is this board is made out of a composite material. And inside that surfboard is this truss structure that's made of multiple pieces of that. So it's one potential use of this composite that is comparable to plywood. So in essence, what we have here is an alternative to a reliance upon plywood. I have shared that it's the world's first surfboard made of leaves. And that's great. It gets attention. It's fun to talk about. But when you take a step back, the way that I look at it is not everybody surfs, but everybody sits. And this composite can be used to make a flat pack chair, let's say. It can be used to make a table. Yes, there's limits, but it can be used for that purpose. So it's kind of interesting how you go from this thought that happens in a guy's backyard, to these iterations in a basement, to MSOE engineers working with it, to this finished product that kind of proves that if this complex structure that has to undergo quite a bit of pressure and, you know, the struggles of being in the water, what else could be done with that?
Right. I'm going to take a moment just to reintroduce you for our listeners. Sure. This is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski speaking with Ken Cole. He's made a surfboard for surfing on Lake Michigan out of eco-friendly materials. And Ken, you were just talking about all the steps from backyard trash inspiration to, you know, your first prototype and iteration. I want to get into a little bit more about how you got there and the community members that helped you. So how did other engineers and surfers and people at MSOE help you to fine-tune this process and these materials?
Yeah, it's I've been very fortunate. And it seems like much of it's related to surfing, too. So years ago, literally 6 years ago, a bunch of us were going up to Door County to surf. And I was riding with a professor. I didn't know he was a professor at the time. I just know him as Mike Sevier from MSOE. And we started just talking. And he shared a lot about his history working at SpaceX and his work now at MSOE. And he introduced me to Dr. Kevin Hart. And, you know, they're always creating, thinking of what next and trying to educate their students and broaden their horizon. And then reached out to a neighbor of mine, Saj, who works there as well. And just a confluence of great ideas and people being open-minded, we had a chance to meet with several folks there, and they offered up their services to meet with this guy.
This hobby maker.
This guy who had an idea.
Yeah.
And what was interesting, though, was it wasn't until I had that meeting with them that I kind of thought that this is not just some wacky thing, because I look at the work that they're doing, the number of students that they're, you know, teaching and educating, and just the success of their graduates. So I know that they're not going to take a lot of time out for something that's just some fly by night or some silly thing. And I think, too, that they saw the passion behind it. So over a lot of back and forth, we made some iterations. We tested it in their lab, looking at the best way to composite while also minimizing waste. And, you know, to their credit, they helped me refine that process. And they even gave me some news at the outset as far as the surfboard goes that was kind of disheartening, where they said, well, if you want to make this, it's going to end up weighing 100 pounds.
Mm, sure.
Which
doesn't help you.
Doesn't
water.
Help. Yeah. I mean, it would float, but who wants to carry on a 100-pound board to the beach, right? So what I learned, though, I'm not an engineer, but what I learned was that feedback was inspirational to kind of say, well, what else could be done? It eventually compelled me to look at another way, another truss structure that was actually brought forward by a colleague of mine, Ted, who helped me finish the board. And we ended up with one that is much more mobile, a heck of a lot lighter. And as you may have seen, it actually works.
Yeah, and with this board and testing it out, you're on prototype one. What next steps are exciting for you? Like, what are you continuously thinking about working on? I'm sure your brain is running every time you take it out to see, like, oh, this was good today, and maybe this could change.
Yeah, and, you know, what's interesting is that's a question I get often.
Yeah.
And I can see why people ask it, because the natural reaction is for someone to say, well, what happens next? The other one that I've heard is, how do you make money at it? And, you know, my full-time gig is not doing this. This is my hobby. This is my stamp collecting. This is my, you know, we all have those, and this happens to be mine. I have a family and a job that means a lot to me, and I have to keep that focus. But I sometimes look at it as, I definitely want to make sure that this is presented to the world in a way that acknowledges the limitations of it, but at least sparks an interest in what else can be done. As I've shared with others, yes, I'm an artist, and I'm a psychologist as well, but if I'm able to come up with something that you could compare to plywood and all the uses that are there without having to contribute to deforestation, if I'm able to come up with a surfboard or a chair that I could sit in, or a box that I can stand on in my basement with the help of a handful of people, what happens if people who have a heck of a lot more resources and time than I do and a lot more training really explore other uses for palm leaves that are on the side of a freeway or in their backyard, or jute that gets tossed out at every, you know, coffee shop when they're done roasting, right? I think there's a lot of potential there. So my main hope is that this inspires people to look at what else could be done. I don't think you have to look far to recognize that the realities of climate change are unflinching and they're devastating. And my belief has been that people are relying on resources that are finite, and we're relying on what's been provided to us as solutions. And we're very, very close to recognizing that we can wait for engineers and scientists to come up with this. But some of them are funded by folks that aren't going to kind of push this kind of innovation. Or we can do it ourselves and hope that people catch on.
Once you took your first board out and you successfully rode a wave with it, what was that feeling like? What was going through your head?
Every wave is different, obviously. But that one I distinctly remember. It's when I watched the footage of it, my ego was like, oh, that looks kind of silly. But in hindsight, I recognize why, because, you know, you're waiting for just the right wave. And I was out there with Ted and then a couple of their friends, and I caught it, you know, dropped in, turned right. And for like a minute, I mean, felt like a minute actually, but for like a second, it looked so fluid. And then I threw my arms up and shouted. And it kind of threw my balance off for a second.
Oh, so sure, yep.
It was a split second of recovery, because this 7-year journey kind of, you know, was made real. And one thing about being an artist, a creative, is you know the finished product before you even start. And you find time to focus on and chip away at it, whether it's on a canvas or a piece of wood, whatever it is. And to kind of see it manifest real, not to prove anybody wrong. It's not one of those mad scientist moments at all. But to kind of realize that from someone's trash to a wave in Sheboygan to conversations with folks like you, they're not doing this to flatter me. They're doing this because it resonates with people. And that first wave was my arms going up in the air, was everything I just shared.
Well, Ken, I want to thank you so much for joining me today to share a bit more about this incredible board that you've built. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Ken Cole is the founder of Greenhouse Surfboards and inventor of the world's first leaf-based surfboard. You can find more information at WUWM.com, including the NPR piece featuring Cole by WUWM's Susan Bentz. Cole was also featured in this month's issue of Milwaukee Magazine in the article called New Wave.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting WUWM.com/Lake Effect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.